Hello, ladies and gentle them. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am solo dolo, but here to do it with a special guest co-host. But first, I'm Jarrett Hill.
And I am Asha Dyer. I'm a TEDx speaker. I'm a producer. I'm an author. I am a reproductive justice advocate. And I am super happy to be joining you today, Jarrett. Thank you for having me as a guest co-host.
Absolutely. Travell is away taking some time for themselves, as I am always advocating for. And if any of you know me very well, you've probably heard Asha's voice before. Coming up on the show this week, I felt like it was vital to discuss Roe v. Wade. But I struggle with how we would have this conversation in a way that feels different than all the hot takes that we're seeing in the world. As I said, if you've been following my work over the past 10 years, you've probably heard Asha on my first show, Back to Reality. She was with me at a short time that I had at BuzzFeed, and then also at Channel Q on the radio. There were a few points that were interesting in our conversation preparing for today's show that said I kind of want to blow out the format for our popcorn pass that we normally have here in the A segment and the Fanti, because if ever there was a complex and complicado conversation, it would be the fall of Roe v. Wade. So first, we're going to kind of talk about what this week has felt like. Just full disclosure, we're taping this show on Monday, so there will certainly be things that will happen in the time between when we're recording this episode and when it comes out. But we want to talk about what it has felt like, but then we want to talk about some of the interesting conversation we had around faith and the way that faith communities have really kind of guided this push for the fall of Roe, and how it's very white Christianity that we've been seeing so much of that has been a part of this conversation. And Asha has a really interesting story about her faith background that we'll get into a little bit more. But before we do all of that, Asha, I'm curious to know what your top line feelings have been, your thoughts about this as we've kind of sat through knowing this was coming and then it arriving, and it's still feeling really jarring, even with the warning that we had.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the word that I've been thinking about a lot is heavy. Mm. And heavy because there's so much to digest. We're only a few days out from the ruling, even though if you've been following a lot of, you know, frontline activists and reporters and advocates, they've been sounding the alarm for many years, being called hysterical. But, you know, I've been reading these along the way, and in the back of my mind, even I, as someone who's very heavily involved in reproductive rights and justice journalism and media, even in the back of my mind, I thought, no, they're not going to do it. Something's going to prevail, and common sense. But, you know, I think I just have to remind myself that we're living in completely unprecedented times. There is so much uncertainty going on, and the heaviness is real, no matter who you are. I think there's a lot to digest. So I've really been feeling a bit tired and overwhelmed, you know, just trying to take it moment by moment. I think it's easy for people who have a voice and a platform to immediately feel the responsibility of share all the links, do the things, and point people in the right direction. And people are asking me questions, and it's okay to just take a moment to breathe and sit in that heaviness, because in those moments is how we kind of figure out the right path forward rather than just the speediest path forward, which may not always be right. So it's heavy.
In our conversation, I was saying to you that I hear in your tone that there's a bit of guilt and shame around this happening. And I've not really heard folks in activism talk about that as much. I would love for you to kind of unpack a little bit of what those feelings are and how they've shown up.
It was really eye-opening to even say that out loud to you, because, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, but I come from a former very white conservative evangelical background. And it was an environment where the goal politically and socially, apart from, you know, getting closer to God, was overturning Roe v. Wade. You know, using words and trigger warning here, quote unquote, abortion is murder, and saying all those really, really horrible, awful things without any thought to who might be hearing this, who this might be affecting, what we're saying, without doing any research about abortion whatsoever. And this is prior to me even knowing that one in four women in America will have an abortion before the age of 45. And so people who have abortions are likely someone you know and someone you love. I didn't know any of that. So being out of that environment, I would say I solidly left in 2013. And now being more progressive, I'm a mother of two, very passionate about the cause of gender equality, reproductive rights and justice, I see abortion access as a human right. And so for me, it's really reckoning with that personal, what personal role did I play in that larger movement? Yes, I'm only one person, but what's my responsibility now that I'm out of that with the media experience that I have, with the personal religious background that I have? What's my role and responsibility now? You know, having that guilt and shame of going along with that movement, knowing now that it was, it's just so, so harmful and it's led to this moment. So I think I'm still sitting with that and figuring out where I go. And I know I'm not alone, that I'm part of a larger community called ex-evangelicals or ex-evangelicals. And we're all over the world. And it's just really interesting to see the conversations that are happening. Like, hey, remember that time we all, you know, used to sit in the pews and talk about overturning Roe v. Wade and how it's going to do all these great things. And now we're here. It's like, whoa, that's heavy. We were part of that push. So yeah, I'm still trying to figure out my way forward through that guilt and shame. And also maybe, and I don't know if this is weird to admit, but maybe this conversation is part of my therapy and, you know, admitting it out loud and having that accountability, because I'm sure there are other people thinking the same thing. Like, how do we, you know, reckon with those things that we did and where we are now? So,
sure.
Yeah.
You've been in activism for reproductive rights for almost a decade now, right? You said you left in 2013, left the church, but like your relationship with God and faith was a challenging one. And I know that you've talked about that before, the relationship that you were in and how challenging that was and how it really shaped a lot of your thinking. What kind of was the catalyst for change for you back then?
Well, I went through a divorce at the age of 29. I got married at 24 for the first time. It's one of the things that you do. You get married very young, and because of the whole, you know, no sex before marriage. And so everyone who's in their early 20s and wants to have sex, it's like, well, the solution is to get married. And that leads to a lot of very, very bad and abusive and toxic outcomes, as it did for me. So I decided to leave that marriage after 4 years. And then at the same time, I thought, I'm going to leave the church because my husband at the time worked at the church. So I thought, it's better for me to leave that church as well as this marriage because it's abusive. Thankfully, my parents back in Australia supported me, although everyone in the church that I was going to, and this is like a 5,000 member church, it's very big. It's in here in Los Angeles. Not one person reached out to me. No one supported me. I had a couple of random Facebook messages from guys who I didn't know saying, you know, God hates divorce. Hang in there. And I wasn't just a Sunday churchgoer. I went to regular church services every Sunday. I sang on the worship team on Friday. I led Bible studies on Wednesday night. I went to youth group. I've taught Sunday school. I've been involved in women's ministries and cooking food and helping out and all the things. So I was involved and people knew who I was. And so to leave, to get myself out of a toxic environment and have no one support me because of the doctrine that they believed in was really jarring. But I'm so thankful to my parents, who are also very committed Christians, supported me in saying, leave, get out of there. So I left, and, you know, leaving that church at the same time was the right thing. And I was, you know, trying to go to a few other churches, trying to find another church home. And then the 2016 election happened, and it was really, really eye-opening to see a few of the smaller white-led churches not say a thing about the horrendous things Donald Trump was saying about immigrants, about women who get abortions should be punished, all that kind of thing. So that was a catalyst for me leaving. And it was just the start of my journey to, you know, really discovering more about reproductive rights. I would put more progressive ideas and links to articles on Facebook, and publicly I would get people pushing back from my old church. But privately, I started to get messages from a few women who would say, hey, thank you for sharing that article. I can never say this to anyone, but I've actually had an abortion. Or women who have had multiple abortions, I'm like, whoa, why are you telling me this now? And why, it's so sad that you feel scared to say this out loud. And some of these were women who were very vocally pro-life, quote unquote, and who would speak out against abortion. So that was really the start of the journey for me to where I am now. And I would consider myself an advocate rather than an activist. And I don't want to, you know, denigrate the work that activists are doing, because I'm definitely not in that league, but I'm utilizing my media experience, my passion, as well as my religious background to really become an advocate and amplify the work that, you know, that the activists out there are doing and share important messages. So in a nutshell, where I am, why I am where I am today.
I think that's a great place for us to take a quick pause. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into how faith and Christianity have really kind of driven this conversation around abortion and reproductive rights, and what that's been like for folks who are Christian who do not see it quite that way. Fanti's coming right back. Don't go anywhere. Okay, so has summer got you feeling like sweaty? Cool down with Brooklinen's 15% off Sidewide summer savings event kicking off this week. The deals are hot, but their sheets, towels, and beach essentials are so breezy. If you're a hot sleeper like I am, Brooklinen's crisp classic sheets help you stay comfy on even the summer's hottest nights. And if you're always looking for the cool side of the pillow, something else I always do, Brooklinen's Marlow pillow is made with cooling infused memory foam, ventilated zippers, and breathable mesh, all to prevent heat retention and promote airflow all night long. Make a statement and a splash with Brooklinen's beach towels, crafted in the USA with durable, high quality materials and available in a range of artist design prints. These towels are luxurious and trendy. I already told y'all that I'm sleeping on Brooklinen sheets. I love my Brooklinen sheets. I really love my Brooklinen pillowcases. And I have like a new duvet that I'm about to put on the bed. Y'all ain't gonna be able to tell me nothing. And if you don't want to miss out, you've got to get over to Brooklinen Summer Savings event because it's coming right now. Listening after the sale, you can still save. Visit brooklinen.com and use promo code FANTI for $20 off of your purchase of $100 plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code FANTI. So just the other day, I had some friends over for lunch, and my friend was like, do you have any weed products? And I was like, first of all, who says weed products? But I said, yes, over in that little drawer over there. And he pulled out the purple container of gummies from Lumi Labs and took one of the little indica gummies and texted me this morning. This was a couple of days ago. He took a few with him, and he was like, yo, what are those gummies? Because I've had the best sleep of my life over the last two nights. And I thought, that's about as ringing an endorsement as you can possibly have for microdosing with Lumi Labs. So you've probably heard about microdosing. And if not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. Our show is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. If you are interested, you've got to check it out because Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com, promo code FANTI. Welcome back to FANTI. It has been a challenging week for folks here in America thinking about Roe v. Wade and reproductive rights over the last couple of days, but really over the last few months as we've known that this was getting ready to happen. And I mean, you could really say over the last few decades because they've been working on this for quite a while. In Asha's conversation with me before the show, we ended up talking a lot about faith, which was not really how I was expecting us to frame the conversation around this. But I have been really fascinated by the ways that we have seen the conservative Christian church, really the evangelicals, really embracing this white Christianity to the extremes of Donald Trump and being anti-abortion and being just overtly racist and all kinds of things. And to me, that has been challenging because I am a person who has been similarly like you. You talked about how like I wasn't just like showing up on Sundays, right? Like I was in vacation Bible school. Indeed. We were going to Bible study. We were there. You know what I mean? Like all of that kind of stuff every week since I was born. Like I was in church when I was born because my uncle had a church, right? And we were all part members of that church.
Right.
But this conversation has been interesting when it comes to the intersectionality of it, because the thing that really has stuck with me beyond Roe specifically is the ruling has a bit of a prescription, right, of what they are planning to do next. And it is incredibly intersectional, right?
Yeah.
In Justice Thomas's opinion, he kind of lays out exactly what they want to do next, right? He calls up the cases of Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell, which specifically talk about contraception, consensual sex between adults, and same-sex marriage or marriage equality as all being targets for the things that they're going to do next. And here on FANTI, I have been like ranting about Don't Say Gay and how that is taking shape in Florida and in other states that will be subsequent after it. And also how Ron DeSantis wants to be president of the United States and how the things that we see happening in Florida could be federal laws within a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And so as I think about what we've seen come from Justice Thomas, all of these things all have something to do with faith. Right. They all have some kind of perspective that is around religion and the ways that people have interpreted, you know, God's will or their religious texts and all of those things. When we're thinking about that, I have been thinking a lot about what it is like to be a person of color in general. Right. But then as we talk about people who can get pregnant, who are affected by this ruling, I think about the intersectionality of being a person who can get pregnant and being Black, right? Or being brown, or being a woman, or being queer, or being in interracial relationships, because even those things are kind of in question right now. When we're thinking about the faith space, what was interesting to me about you in our conversation, I hadn't known this before, but you serve on the board of the Religious Coalition for Religious Choice, which is something I was not familiar with. Can you talk to us a little bit about what the work of the Religious Coalition for Religious Choice does and what it has illuminated for you since you've been there?
Yeah, so the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, or RCRC.org, has been around since 1967, so pre-Roe days. And they actually, so we're an interfaith organization. I'm a board member. I've been around for about a year and a half, and we represent a number of different religions, and we're continuing to grow and adapt to the current landscape. Back in the day when the organization was founded, they really were representative of a movement called the Clergy Consultation Service, who were faith leaders of all different spiritual backgrounds who would help women get abortions, safe abortions, at a time when it was illegal. So it's important to just, you know, to really highlight the fact that spirituality and faith has always been at the forefront of abortion access in America. And the majority of people of faith in America today support Roe v. Wade, support access to abortion and reproductive rights. So I think it's important to remember that. The opposition to abortion did not begin with Roe v. Wade in 1973. And it's always been a predominantly white Catholic issue, but they were never overtly political. They would go to their clinics, they would pray the rosary, they would have their vigils and, you know, do their crusades and really be about, you know, life from womb to tomb. That's a philosophy that a lot of them, you know, talk about. Where the white evangelical church came in and co-opted it, had nothing to do with abortion. It was all to do with systemic racism. And it started with a Supreme Court case called Brown versus Board of Education. That was roughly 1976. And so they co-opted the abortion issue because what they realized was that the evangelical church, the white evangelical church, needed to gain power to get into law all the things that they wanted. And the way to do that was to find an issue that they could galvanize church members and people of their communities to go to the voting booth. Because prior to that, evangelicals were always very much taking a backseat when it came to politics, which sounds very foreign today because they are very, very entrenched in politics with their organizations, with their churches, with their leaders, with their activism. So it really started out with systemic racism. And even today, the anti-abortion movement is very much about racism. It is about white supremacy. So I always make a point of mentioning that. And so where the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice comes in is we are part of a number of other faith-led organizations like Catholics for Choice and National Council for Jewish Women and many others who are reclaiming the narrative that to be religious or spiritual or faithful means to be anti-abortion. That couldn't be further from the truth. And actually, when you look at data, and there have been studies that have been commissioned by religious Christian organizations such as Lifeway Research. And I talked about this in a TEDx talk I did in 2018. They did a study on people who get abortions and they found a majority are Christian women. And the quote that they used in the headline of their study when they reported on the findings was that many women go silently from the church pew to the clinic because they know that there is now an environment in churches where you can't speak about your abortion. You cannot get support. In fact, you will be shunned and shamed and judged and ostracized. So I think it's really important for people, for a choice, people of faith, to really stand up and speak out, like now is the moment. And you have a rich tradition and history to back you up, and a whole large community that are going to be rising up more and more in the days and months to come to talk about the fact that reproductive freedom and dignity is a spiritual value. And also it ties into that idea of religious freedom. You know, the idea of religious freedom gets bandied about a lot in conservative circles that, hey, it's a religious freedom, we need to ban abortion. But actually, when you look at other faiths like the Jewish faith and Islam and Hinduism, they don't ban abortion and they don't have this anti-abortion stance the way that the white conservative evangelical church would like everyone to think. So access to abortion is also a reproductive freedom issue. And I think it's important to remember that.
One of the things that came up in our conversation that really speaks to what you're talking about right now makes me think about something that someone said to me about the way that we try to evangelize Christianity, right? And like, yeah. I have never seen myself as an evangelist that is like trying to make people believe that they need to think what I think or feel what I feel or believe what I believe. And Pastor Jamal Wright out of Georgia, he said to me, he was like, yeah, that's not your gig, right? Like, that's not what God asked us to do. And like, I think that it has been fascinating and frustrating to watch the ways that Christianity, and specifically a white evangelical Christianity, has always really dominated what America was trying to be, no matter what it said it wanted to be. Yeah. And the ways that we have seen that, like, completely begin to fracture away from what the message of God was supposed to be and what the work of the church was supposed to be. And like, I've found myself really frustrated with having to really make sincere distinction between like the difference between God and quote the church and how those things are so distinctly different, right? And the ways that we see quote the church, because I do quote the church because I think that there's all these ideas about what that is, right? Yeah. For some people, the church is the church that they go to. And for some people, the church is like this behemoth of a machine that has been pushing political ideology here in America for a long time. The idea of everyone has to believe what we believe, but also like we are going to legislate that.
Yeah.
Right. That has been something that has been really frustrating and upsetting to me, because I think that we are starting to miss the whole essence of like what this message was supposed to be, which was love one another. Right. Mm-hmm. And as I think about that, I'm frustrated and I'm upset. And I'm also like, what are we supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
Right. And as I hear you talking about in our conversation earlier, you were talking about the guilt and shame. And like, I feel a bit of a frustration and also a bit of what am I supposed to be doing as a cis black man, right, about this. And all of those things are kind of going through my mind about like, what is my gig? Right. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? What am I supposed to be doing? And like, even that kind of a thing I've talked about here on the show, the idea of should and supposed to always have to do with someone else's expectations of me, right? Of me or of us or of community. And so as you're thinking about how your faith interacts with your reproductive justice politic, how do you think about those things together? How do you think about what your Christianity says about reproductive rights? Because I know that you even cite things in the Bible about abortion that I didn't even know about.
And I didn't know about this until I left the conservative evangelical church. And yeah, I just want to mention how freeing it is to hear that idea, that is not your gig. Because I always felt like a fraud. And I came from a tradition where they're like, you always have to evangelize at every moment. When you're sitting on an airplane, talk about Jesus. You're at the checkout line in the supermarket, talk about Jesus. I'm like, yeah, I have no problem talking and, you know, being in front of crowds. But I'm like, talking about Jesus, it never felt authentic to who I was. Whereas being in conversations like this and doing the work that I'm doing now, I get to authentically show up and be myself. And that's one of the things that we don't often get taught in conservative circles. It, you have to be this hegemonic idea of what it should be to be human and, you know, cancel out all the things that make you uniquely you. So for me today, it's really about going on a journey of learning and unlearning the things that were very harmful, just extricating myself from that dogmatic mindset of you should do this, you shouldn't do that. And, you know, in the Bible, I'm following progressive rabbis and faith leaders and Catholics and learning about things that are in the Bible, because the verse that gets weaponized the most is, for people who are familiar with the Bible and Christianity especially, is before you were in the womb, I knew you, this very poetic verse. And they're saying, see, that means God hates abortion and therefore we have to be anti-abortion. Actually, if you read the whole Bible. In the Old Testament, there are some very specific Jewish laws which talk about punishments for a pregnant woman if she's hurt and the fetus dies. And essentially what it does is describe that the pregnant woman is of more value than the fetus. And a lot of people in the Jewish tradition believe that life begins at first breath. And I pulled up the article here just so if people want to look it up. In Exodus 21, chapter 21, verse 22, there's a story about a pregnant woman who is injured and aborts the fetus, warrants financial compensation only to a husband, suggesting that the fetus is property, not a person. So they're saying that if a pregnant woman is hurt and only the baby dies, then it's not as big of a deal that where if the woman dies as well, because they value the life of the mother because she's carrying that life. And there was another verse in Numbers chapter 5, verse 11, which is called the test for an unfaithful wife. They really thought highly of women in those days. So essentially, it describes giving a bitter herbal potion to a woman who has been unfaithful to test whether she is being unfaithful. Because if she has been unfaithful and she gets pregnant, drinks the potion, then the fetus will die. And if nothing happens, then I guess she hasn't been unfaithful. So all of those verses, you know, can be cited, and it just, it's never such this black and white dogmatic line drawn in the sand of God hates abortion because it says so in the Bible and that's it, end of story. You know, there are so many horrible things in the Bible that don't often get talked about enough, and I just think it's wrong to tell someone how they should believe, what they should believe, and how they should live and act when I think it's all a journey and asking questions and figuring it out and also allowing people to live the life that they know is best for them and giving people the space and grace to do that. And I don't think our Supreme Court is going to allow people to do that.
It's interesting because I saw this clip of this woman named Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks. And like,
yes.
I'm not like a big follower of the Young Turks, but I saw this clip from her. And what was interesting to me was she was talking about, I am not Christian, but I will fight for your right to be, to have religious freedom. But also, I should not have to be fighting against your law, your Christian law, your Christian beliefs, and all of those different things. And like, that made me think about the conversation we had around marriage equality, right? Like, if you don't want to, if you don't believe in gay marriage, don't get gay married, right?
Right.
And to me, it has always been interesting because I always thought like, if marriage was about religion, you'd have to be Christian to get married.
Right.
Right. And like, to my knowledge, that's never been the case.
Not in this country. Congress shall make no law establishing a religion. Yada, yada, yada.
There we go. Exactly. And so when I think about abortion, I really see it the same way. The way that our country and our culture discusses abortion is really rooted in Christianity. And so I also kind of start to think about the ways that all of these other intersectional issues that we've discussed about same-sex sex, same-sex marriage, contraception, many different things that have that bring up these questions of like what's coming next are all really rooted in faith conversation. And like when I think about all of the people who are not Christian, right, who are either agnostic or atheist or fall into the many different religions that we have represented throughout our country, it's really, it's incredibly white, right,
to
approach this issue and say, like, everybody has to move in this way. And as I think about where we're going with the possibility of Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis becoming president of the United States in 2024, because Democrats really have not put anybody forward that is going to, like, challenge that well. I don't see Joe Biden taking a second term, right? Maybe, but like, I love Kamala Harris. I don't see her going against Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. And so it's incredibly frustrating and concerning that we don't really seem to have the opposition ready for something like this. As you're thinking about it, I'm curious, like, what do you see as like the things that are bringing you some hope that you see coming as far as like, well, these things are moving, or activists are moving in this way, or we're hearing people conversing about this. What are those things for you?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. I think I'm still finding moments of hope wherever I can in the midst of such a heavy, overwhelming moment. The first thing I will say is Ketanji Brown Jackson is coming to the Supreme Court in the next term. So thank God, because our Supreme Court does not represent America. It is predominantly white. It is predominantly male. They are predominantly Catholic conservatives. That does not represent the multicultural demographic that makes up America today. It just does not. So the fact that it's 2022 and we're only just now getting a black woman on the Supreme Court is wild to me. So,
and even as you talk about the makeup of the court, one of the asterisks that's always important to include there, as we look at the justices on the court, these three of them were appointed by Donald Trump, someone who did not win the popular vote in this country either time that he ran, right? But has gotten to really reshape, reform, whatever the court, and, you know, their white Republican God image. Right.
Yeah.
And like, as we continue to see those things happen, I continue to think about what path we're on. Right. We talked about Don't Say Gay a lot on this show. We've talked about Roe v. Wade even in this conversation in the weeks coming. But it's like this nation is really trying to overcorrect, if you will. Like, I think about when you're learning how to drive and they're like, oh, you know, you don't overcorrect the wheel back in the other direction because that makes your car spin out of control. And that's what it feels like we're doing.
That's kind of what, for sure.
That's what it feels like we're doing as we see why people like really embracing this idea of Christianity that has nothing to do with God, as we see our legislator really like moving in this direction toward Donald Trump and authoritarianism and all of those things. It starts to make me concerned about even living in this country some days, right?
Yeah.
How are you thinking as a mom, as a parent that has young kids, like what are the things that are coming up for you about that?
I think it becomes more terrifying every day when we see the news and I scroll through my social media. My kids start public school this fall, you know, with the recent school shooting in Texas. It terrifies me that there is so much inaction being done because of the minority that holds power. And that's the other thing I think about the Supreme Court and the legislatures and Congress. It's a minority of people in power who do not represent the majority of people in America. And it's so frustrating that, you know, the majority of people want common sense gun reform. They want Roe v. Wade to be around. They want access to reproductive rights. They want people to be able to marry whoever they want to marry. And they're pushing this white supremacist, hegemonic, white Christian agenda that does not belong in today's American society. And it should not be. And granted, you know, that's kind of the way America was founded, but we can't kind of let that take over because it's going to be a very, very dark day, you know, the more these rulings come down. And today, as we're recording, there was we're in the last week of the Supreme Court term of this year. They just ruled on a case about religious freedom in schools. It was a big case, and basically they've overturned the separation of church and state in public schools, now saying that teachers and leaders have the right to lead prayer on school property. I mean, that's a big deal because they're talking about white Christian prayer. They're not talking about Islam. They're not talking about Hinduism. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about all the other faiths that make up the demographic of America today. They're really trying to push this very narrow idea of religious freedom. So it's even reclaiming that term, religious freedom. And so for me, you know, I really want to raise my kids in a society where they get to choose if they want to have a religion or not. They're going to learn that I'm going to talk to them about my religious background. My husband, who is Italian Catholic background, also from Australia, you know, he's going to talk about his background, but we've made a very conscious effort to not be like, all right, we're going to go to church. You're going to go to Sunday school. You're going to believe this. This is the word of God. We want to expose them to different ideas of thought and allow them to choose. And that's no shade to my parents. You know, my parents are immigrant parents. They moved from India to East Africa to England, which was very white compared to where they came from, and then to Australia. So, you know, I think a lot of immigrant parents with ethnic backgrounds were doing the best that they could. And for my parents, they found a church community which really gave them a lot of value. And it was wonderful and beautiful, and it was not political like it is in America. But for me, it's like there are things that I want to do differently. So it's still terrifying to see my kids in an environment where, is my daughter going to be holding up a sign in 20 years, 30 years saying, I can't believe I still have to protest this shit, the ones that we see at the women's marches? And, you know, that's really troublesome to me. But I think it's motivation to keep going with the work that I'm doing. And you know, just a reminder that the things that are happening now are not coming about from a surprise. It's been put in place for a long time, you know, in 2016, Hillary warned us, and everything she said in those debates.
Yeah,
she was
but
right.
Asha, her emails, like,
her
come on.
Emails, I can't
that
forget.
Was absurd.
I mean, and you know, she was someone who has a genuine religious faith. She's Methodist, and she talked very expertly about how Donald Trump wanted to remake the Supreme Court for generations, overturning Roe versus Wade and upholding Citizens United. People are sharing that quote because that is exactly what he did. That is why 81% of white conservative evangelicals voted for Donald Trump, not caring that he was a sexual predator, not caring that he nominated Brett Kavanaugh, another sexual predator, and a literal handmaiden, Amy Coney Barrett, and conservative extremist Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, because it was all a plan to give them Roe v. Wade on a platter. And that's exactly what happened. So it's a lot. That was a huge rant. But my answer is we just got to...
It's important, though. One of the things that I talked with you about wanting to make sure that we leave people with is not necessarily a bunch of answers, but maybe right. some good questions to be asking themselves. And then you brought up that even if we're thinking about this from a faith perspective, there's a tweet that comes from Kevin Nye. It says, in the Gospels, Jesus is asked 187 questions. He answers maybe 8 of them. He himself asks 307. Maybe faith isn't about certainty, but learning to ask and sit in the complexity of good questions. And I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. Now, mind you, I haven't counted all of the questions that Jesus got in the Bible or that he asked. So I can't vouch for those numbers specifically, but I am really intrigued by the questions that we might want to be asking ourselves, right? I think that so yeah. often we want to have answers to what we're supposed to do, answers for how we're supposed to move, answers for what we're supposed to give,
yeah.
answers that we're always looking for. But I think that there is some value in giving ourselves some questions to be asking.
Yeah.
And the questions that I'm wanting people to be thinking about are, and I want to know what those are for you, but I want people to be asking, how does this, specifically Roe falling, how does this impact people that I love? How does it impact people that I care about? And how does it impact me? And I think that there are a lot of people who don't see how this impacts them, right? But if you start thinking about who your friends are and who your family members are, and then maybe thinking again about you, right? You can start to see how this has an impact for most people in this country,
yeah.
Regardless of what state you live in, regardless of what you believe, regardless of who your governor is or not my president and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, no matter where you are on that spectrum, this is gonna have an impact on you. And I really wanna say that, especially to people like myself and like you who live in California, who feel like we're safe from this,
we're
right?
Safe.
Like,
yeah.
this is not gonna have a whole bunch of impact here, but like, we're going through a mayoral election here in Los Angeles,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at Karen Bass and Rick Caruso, who
is an anti-choice former Republican billionaire.
Exactly, right? And like, those kinds of things have an impact here in
Absolutely.
California, even in
yes.
Los Angeles specifically.
Yep.
And we're thinking about our governor's races coming and all
yep.
of those
November,
different things.
Yep.
This has an impact on everyone. And so I would really love for people, rather than giving them answers to things, like to be thinking about, what are the ways that this impacts the people that I love, the people that I know, the people that I work mm-hmm. with? And what are the ways that this is going to have an impact on me? What are some of the questions that you would love for people to be thinking about or asking themselves or having conversations about as we're looking forward?
Yeah, I love that idea of constantly questioning who we are, where we are, what we're doing, because I think that puts us in a state of constantly being accountable and, you know, reevaluating mm-hmm. where we are. So for me, it's, what is my motivation behind the work that we're doing? You know, all of us are involved in a number of different things in life, whether it's activism, whether it's in the work that we do, whether it's in our communities. So for me, the question has constantly been, as I've been going on this journey of, you know, leaving my former conservative evangelical church, getting more involved in reproductive rights and media and using my platform to speak out, is what is my motivation? Am I just trying to get back, quote unquote, at the church who espouse all these horrible ideas about abortion and reproductive rights? Am I just trying to get back at that person who said something horrible to me on Facebook? Or am I genuinely doing this from a place of, oh, I want to take accountable for the role that I played in this movement and really want to share valuable information and resources? And so one of the ways or examples that's produced a shift in me is less arguments on social media. I used to be like, oh, I've got to argue back. I've got to jump into this thing. But now I'm like, I've learned from other reproductive rights leaders that who cares? Let them say whatever they want on social media. The real work is, for me, sharing resources, amplifying the people who are doing a lot of work on the front lines of activism of reproductive justice and rights. And, you know, just focusing on the people who need the access to reproductive care rather than trying to get back at anti-choice people on Twitter or Facebook. Like, it's such a waste of time. Debates, for me, are such a waste of time. That's not my gig. And so I really want people to think about, what is your motivation? How do you continue to keep yourself accountable in the space where you are? And, you know, as you do the work that you do, if that answer changes over time, that is perfectly okay. But to keep ourselves in check and keep ourselves accountable, I think is really important, because it's easy to get burnt out and easy to get overwhelmed. So those are the questions I want to offer to people listening today.
Lastly, I asked you about, like, where are you finding a little bit of joy? Where are you finding a little bit of encouragement? Where are you finding something to kind of keep going, right? To get out of bed in the morning, yeah, on the days that are the hardest. And you introduced me to the Resistance Revival Chorus.
Yes.
Tell us about them. And then I want to end on a clip of them just recently.
Yeah, the Resistance Revival Chorus. Follow them now, download their music, and share all their stuff all over social media. They are a group of women and non-binary artists and singers who come together, and they do these a cappella performances in New York and Washington, D.C., at marches and rallies and different events. And I believe they came about in response to the Trump election, where they would, you know, show up at these public events and just to spread joy and talk about the fact that joy is an act of resistance. And a lot of the members of the choir are Black and brown women and non-binary folks. And they, you know, they come from a rich tradition of people who have been oppressed, but who use beauty and are in the moments of those oppression to stay hopeful and to stay together with their communities and to continue on in the future. So I really love, you know, scrolling through my news feeds, getting overwhelmed, and then just seeing like a clip of the chorus performing somewhere, clapping, and they're wearing all white and they're just so joyful. I'm like, ah, yes, that was just the beautiful reset that we need. And I often think about this quote from Karen Spruch from Planned Parenthood, who I've been sharing a lot on social media. And she said, we're never going to change these policies unless we change the culture. And the way we change the culture is through art. And I'm sure everyone can point to a film or a poem or a song or something throughout history that has changed the world. And so it really makes me think that, you know, the Supreme Court can take away certain rights, but they cannot steal or legislate your joy or your inner beauty. And I really want to hope and think about the fact that through this joy will come seeds of a new hope that we can birth into the world, where we take back our power and our agency and we decide what kind of future we have. And for me, it does start with joy and the Resistance Revival Chorus.
I think that is a great place for us to wrap up this conversation, as we are going forward in a post-Roe world, but a world where we can still imagine and still fight for the future that we want for our future generations, for your kids, for my future, yeah, kids, God willing, or God forbid, I don't know, depending on the day. as we go to break, I want to give you a little taste of this beautiful post that we just saw from the Resistance Revival Chorus, and remind you that we've talked about this on the show before in the context of the pandemic and quarantine, that like in the moments when we are going through the most challenging things in our worlds, oftentimes we turn to artists and creatives to inspire us, to encourage us, to educate us, to do all of the many different things that are able to help shift culture in the way that you spoke about. So as we go to break, here is the Resistance Revival Chorus. And this is a recent post of theirs on Instagram. If you want to go see the full thing, you can check out the notes. But we'll take a quick break and let you hear from them.
Hal Lublin here with breaking news on a revolutionary form of entertainment, professional wrestling. For more, we go to our correspondent, Danielle Radford.
Professional wrestling is the craze that's sweeping the nation, featuring fisticuffs, at Colorful Costumes.
But who can help us make sense of this world of body slams? Lindsay Kelk has the answer.
Sources tell us of an amazing podcast called Tights and Fights, filled with discussions of the absurdity of professional wrestling, plus all the sincerity and hilarity that you could shake a stick at.
Listen to the Tights and Fights podcast every week.
Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
And your old-timey radio.
Hey there, I'm Ellen Weatherford.
And I'm Christian Weatherford.
And we've got big feelings about animals that we just gotta share.
On Just the Zoo of Us, your new favorite animal review podcast, we're here to critically evaluate how each animal excels and how it doesn't, rating them out of 10 on their effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics.
Guest experts give you their takes informed by actual, real-life experiences studying and working with very cool animals like sharks, cheetahs, and sea turtles.
It's a field trip to the zoo for your ears.
So if you or your kids have ever wondered if a pigeon can count, why sloths move so slow, or how a spider sees the world, find out with us every Wednesday on Just the Zoo of Us in its natural habitat on MaximumFun.org.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fanti. It is now time for our dishonorable mentions. We'll get into your angry listener feedback next week when Travelle comes back. But these are the stories of people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. I want to shout out, mind you, I'm taking a hard left turn here, right? I have been like just kind of immersing myself back into pop culture and social media since being away on hiatus. And I want to shout out Saucy Santana. Now, let me tell you, I've not been like a huge Saucy Santana stan. And if you don't know who Saucy Santana is, hit your Apple Music, find out about what it is. Their new song is called Booty, which, you know, really gets right to the point. Right there, right? The song is really cute, but then there's also a song called Material Girl, and we've just seen Saucy Santana performing with Madonna on stage, which you can feel how you feel about Madonna, but everybody can appreciate that that is a moment for a Black queer artist to be on stage with Madonna. And then they also performed with Summer Walker here in LA last week. They just performed at the BET Awards pre-show. So I'm just really, really excited for Saucy Santana to be having this fantastic moment. While we're talking about artists, I want to talk about Doechii. If you're not familiar with Doechii, it's spelled D-O-E-C-H-I-I. Her performance at the BET Awards, I was just like sitting up in my seat, like, what is happening? I did not know Doechii was going to give us that kind of performance. I'd heard the song Persuasive before, which I love, but I also really respected her more because like there were some technical issues happening while she was performing and like she powered through and I was like, go off! I was like screaming in my living room, like, go off! And I rewound it like 5 different times. So if you can, I'll put the link to the performance in our episode notes, but the BET Awards performance from Doechii, I was just like, I have to shout out this woman who just killed it at that award show. And you can see it on the faces of the people in the room that were there, like, oh my God, that was so good. And like, I saw one Black woman in the audience that was watching. She was like, that's my bitch. That is my bitch. Like, she was going in. So she was really excited. And I was excited. I've watched it repeatedly. By the time you're hearing this, I've probably watched it 10 more times. But want to give a shout out to Doechii and her performance at the BET Awards. Asha, what you got for us in dishonorable mentions?
Well, first I want to say that any performer who can power through technical difficulties on a major stage and award show, I mean, definitely deserves respect. So go all in, Doechii. First, I want to give an honorable mention shout out to AOC, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of course. She really called out Democratic Party because in this moment, you know, we elected Democrats in the 2018 midterms by an overwhelming majority. We banded together and just sucked it up and voted for Joe Biden. We're like, here's all the power. Codify Roe. Do all the things. Protect our rights. They've done some good things, but I think there are a lot of people who are very frustrated in the moment, seeing Roe fall and hearing Nancy Pelosi recite a poem at the podium, hearing some congressional Democrats sing God Bless America on the steps of the Capitol. It's like, get inside and start legislating, MFers. Like, so it's a really great clip of what she's talked about on national TV about how her party needs to step it up and do more. So let's take a listen to this little soundbite.
I think what we need to do is show the American people that when they give the Democratic Party power and when they actually do vote for us, that we will be using and we are willing to use the power that they do give us in order to merit increased expansions in our majority.
Right. She said it all. I believe that was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd, who, you know, hasn't been the best when it comes to talking about Democratic policies and having the best interview. So I love that AOC just gets straight to the point and says, like, this is what we need to do. So I love that. But I also have a dishonorable mention because Roe versus Wade just fell and there have been some doozies. Her name's not Karen. She's a representative from Utah who went at a press release, who went on national TV and just said some gibberish about a sperm in a woman's body and
I did not understand what she was saying in this clip.
Just to rewind a little bit, we showed it to Jarrett just before we recorded and his reaction was, wait, I'm sorry, what now? I'm like, that's literally what everyone's writing, quote, tweeting and sharing this. Like, I'm sorry, what did you say? It doesn't even make sense, but it just goes to show you the huge disconnect between, and the fact that it's a woman, like,
listen.
Don't you know about science and biology and you're legislating this kind of stuff? Oh, wow. So even though it's like sad and makes me so angry that these people are in power, it's also like, oh my God. So just take a listen and try and figure it out as you can.
Clearly don't trust women enough to make choices to control their own body. And my response is, I do trust women enough to control when they allow a man to ejaculate. So inside of them and to control that intake of semen. So that may be inflammatory, but I think as a legislature, we have the responsibility to create a legal framework that is friendly and supporting rights.
So essentially she's saying, oh no, we're not taking away your rights and choice, but when someone ejaculates inside you, this is what you need to do. So she kind of canceled out what she was saying, but just the absurdity of, I mean, I can't even like fully articulate how ridiculous it was that she said, because
I mean, it's always great to hear from scientists about science. And I'm going to leave that there. It makes me think about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which by now I'm sure everyone has seen this clip of Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about, we want, you know, children to be as safe in the womb as they are in a classroom. And it's like, read the room. Like, what are you talking about?
God, and that's depressing.
And she's running for governor, I believe, right?
Governor.
And
yes.
Is it Kentucky that she's in?
Arkansas.
Shout out to all of our listeners in Arkansas, because I'm sure there are many. And I can't imagine any of you are voting for Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but
please do not vote.
We'll
for
keep
her.
You lifted up. It is now time for
Black History is happening every day.
So I got a DM from one of our listeners. And now, mind you, I don't really love when people just be sending me random shit with no context. So this week's Black History is Happening Every Day goes out to the 1969 South Down High Eagles baseball state champions. Now, why the hell am I doing this, right? This comes from Eric. I believe his last name is League or Liege, L-I-G-E. And his post says the following. 52 years ago, my stepfather, James Johnson, and 18 other African-American teenage baseball players from South Down High School in Houma, Louisiana, won their state championship circa May 1969. However, this team of young Black teenage baseball players was never honored for their big win that night in their hometown. In the words of my mom, quote, there was so much racism and segregation back then, end quote, that Black teams were not allowed to compete against white teams or receive recognition. And the one time that my stepfather's team did compete against a white team and won, they received immediate backlash. I was told by my mom and stepfather that an angry crowd began shouting at the Black team, saying things like, quote, you may have won the game, but the fight isn't over. The Black players had to then be escorted out by local police because a white mob were rocking the team's bus in an attempt to turn it over. Thankfully, the Black youth made it out unscathed, but they also never received fanfare or proper recognition for their big accomplishment in winning the state championship. It's as if it never happened. So I want to make sure that we give a shout out to the 1969 Southdown Eagles baseball state champions. Their names, the players, are Sidney Smith, Nathaniel Thomas, Gerald Prince, Charles Wesley, Edgar Commodore, Elward Williams, James Johnson, James Stewart, Lawyer Williams, Ray James, Don Johnson, Tyrone Bolden, Graylin Williams, Bobby Douglas, Ben Norman, John Fleming, Burnell Thomas, Solomon Thomas Jr. I thought I could get it all out in one breath, but I can't. Freddie Coleman, Herman Lyons, Tyrone Smith, Elroy Clay, Lester Brown, and Edward Wesley. Shout out to all of them because you are definitely Black history. That said, we are going to wrap it up here. Asha, before we wrap up the show, I want to make sure that people know where they can find you and the work that you're doing. So tell people about where they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. But first, before I get into that, I just want to mention two things, two points of action that people can take in this moment now that Roe v. Wade has fallen. The first is to call your representatives in Congress and pressure them to pass the Women's Health Protection Act, or WHIPA. That's the law that will codify Roe on a national level. So call them, pressure them, hound them, harass them, do all the things, because that's their job. Like AOC said, the other thing you can do is donate to an abortion fund, and you can go to National Network of Abortion Funds. They are going to be inundated with people asking them, help us travel out of state to get abortion care. As all these states are now going to be a hodgepodge of abortion laws, many people need to get care and many people are going to have to travel and they don't have the means. So if you donate to National Network of Abortion Funds, that's the best place your money can go to right now. So those are two points of action that I want to share with people. In terms of finding me, you can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Asha Dyer. My website is ashadyer.com. You can find the work that I do with the RCRC group by just heading to rcrc.org. You can also go to reprofilmfest.org. I host a podcast there where I interview filmmakers who are making films about various reproductive rights and justice topics every month. You can also head to girltalkhq.com. It is a feminist media blog that I created, and I share stories of everyday women, girls, and non-binary folks doing badass things. So those are the places you can find me, and please hit me up. I'm always happy to chat and hear about amazing stories and inspiring work that people are doing in the world, because I think joy is something that keeps the world going.
Asha, you know you're one of my faves. I really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time and talent today. If you are really into Asha and just like need to get more of her on Fantai, Incorrectly Political is the name of the episode from last October, also featuring Keith Boykin. That was a really popular episode. So y'all can go check out Incorrectly Political from October 14th of 2021. Asha, again, thank you so much. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you leave us a 5-star rating and a review. Let us know what you love about the show. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fantai Podcast on Instagram and on Twitter. Use the hashtag FantaiFam. Also, make sure to check out Asha on all the social medias. You can send us an email at fantai@maximumfun.org, or you can hit us up and make sure to join the Fantai fam at maximumfun.org/join. Become a financially contributing member of the show. We would greatly appreciate it. Our music is by Corice. That is Core.ece. Our graphics are done by Ashley Nguyen and the fantastic people over at Moonhouse Creative. Now, Asha, you're going to have to do air horns here when I say Laura Swisher's name. Just a holla of a... Are you ready? Are you ready? Okay. Our producer is Laura Swisher! Nice work. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Under my feet, ain't gonna let the system walk all over.
Where are they now?
feet, under my feet.